hello and welcome to the Golden Generation. It's a pleasure to have you tuning into the show, wherever you are, whether it's your first time listening or you're back for another episode. We're delighted to have you here. My name's Harper Pestinger. And as usual, we've got a panel. First up, I'll introduce our special guest, I reckon, first up, from South Australian Indigenous football, Adelaide United legend, former captain, Travis Dodd. Travis, how are you?
Well, you told me to put my hand up if I want to say anything. So thank you for having me on the show, boys. But the first thing is I feel like you need to add to that opener, the audio for the opener, because Andy Harper did an unbelievable grab when we played in the Asian Champions League and we scored the, I don't know, first or second goal against Bunyipkor up like a salmon, a sporting salmon. That's some of the greatest commentary you'll ever hear.
You know what's funny about that, Trav? When we originally were thinking of off the wall names for this podcast, spawning salmon got mentioned by me, and our non South Australian friends shot it down. So
you need to get some new friends, mate.
Well, the voice that you heard there before he was introduced, speaking out of turn, was the second banana South Australian, Lucas Ronaldo. How are you going, Lucas?
I'll make sure I put my hand up as well from now on. I'm great, Harper. Another week back on and another week back closer to the World Cup as well.
Oh, it's very, very exciting. And I'm even more excited because we've got wannabe Social Division 4 futsal captain on the show today, Tom Williams. Tom, how you going, Matt?
Very well, but also sort of not well, because it's another week and another week of equal parity between Victorians and South Australians on this show. I think we need to start asserting our dominance on here, Harper.
Yeah, it's not very populationally proportional, is it? We need Pat back on the show. We need to kick one of these wannabes off.
But nah, Pat's got the sack after his one in tipping this week.
Yeah, Pat is in. Pat Prichotto.
1 out of 5 zero, is A League tipping.
Yeah, 1 out of 6.
One out of six this week, 0 out of 6 last week. So he's not coming back on. He stepped up his game. But Tom, we'll go to you first. We'll talk to you about Bruno Fornaroli signing for the Melbourne Victory after mutually terminating his contract at Perth Glory. Victory, they're goalless in 3 games at the moment. So what's this signing of Bruno Fornaroli going to do for them?
I think it'll do a lot for them. And I think it's very easy to just go to the cliche that Victory haven't scored in 3 games and that, oh, Victory are signing a striker. They're going to fix that. But I think it delves sort of, you've got to delve deeper into that and delve into the things that Fornaroli provides as a player in terms of being able to draw defenders, in terms of being able to drop deep. And I think he really suits what this new Victory team are doing. A cheeky plug, but there'll be an article coming out on Kick 360 tomorrow, probably today when this podcast is going up. And it will basically explain why I think Fornaroli is a really good signing for Melbourne Victory. And one of the main reasons is that Victory have struggled against teams that just sit deep and absorb pressure. Fornaroli is really good at dropping deep. And he's a different type of player to D'Agostino. So I think having that versatility and that flexibility will really help. It's interesting, though, because he's obviously a bit of a legend at Melbourne City. So hopefully he'll carve his name into Victory folklore now.
And Trav, I'll ask you, for Perth, how does, well, they looked like they weren't going to play him for the rest of the season, but how does losing Bruno Fornaroli impact them? And because he was taking up an Australian spot, wasn't taking up any visa spots, so they'd have to bring in an Australian if they want to replace him.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, you know, having watched the game on the weekend between Adelaide United and Perth Glory, the Azabel, he was okay but didn't get involved in the game a lot. He's a completely different player to Fornaroli in terms of how they tried to utilise him. It was a lot of longer balls and flick-ons and things like that. And are they going to get a lot of success with that? I don't think so. You know, look at Perth in the first half. I think they really struggled for ideas. They had some joy in the first 5-10 minutes, but after that they really struggled. And it wasn't until Giordano Colli wonder strike that really got them back into the game. But apart from that, they had no real impetus going forward. So losing a striker for the caliber of Fornaroli, I think it's gonna cost them this year.
Now, Lucas, of course, as Tom spoke about last week, Fornaroli wasn't playing. Didn't look like he was going to play because Perth didn't want to automatically trigger that contract extension, the clause where he was going to hit a certain amount of goals and then trigger that extension. So, and then he got shitty with that, of course, being left on the bench. So is it right that he's able to leave and then 1 week later, outside the transfer window, probably going to play for Melbourne Victory on Friday night?
Yeah, I think it's only, you'd only get that situation in the A-League, because obviously around the world you have transfer fees and stuff like that. Here, players can just sort of get their contracts torn up and then, oh, okay, I'm going to be an injury replacement player somewhere else. For him, there's a lot of talk about, oh, is this a snake move or something like that. I don't see it as that, to be honest. I feel like there's been enough time, and the way he left Melbourne City as well is maybe not as bad as some other examples, but it is good for the drama of a Melbourne derby, and the one just before Christmas is going to be quite intense. But I wouldn't say it's wrong that he can move elsewhere outside the transfer window, but it's definitely unique to the league. And like Trav touched on, for Perth, it's bizarre because they've got no one else there. And we'll get into that game in particular later on, but defensively they're awful, so they're going to need to score a lot of goals going forward. So for Perth now, they can't bring anyone in, so it's a bit of an odd situation for them, because they were already last year and have looked awful to start the season with the exception of the week before.
So I'm going to cut you off, Tom. I saw you had your fingers up there, but I'll cut you off. The question that I have though with these clubs is why do they let them go? They're under no obligation to let him go. So they're doing it because they think they're going to be a disruption within the group. Maybe it's because they don't want to pay the wages. But at the end of the day, it's the club, Perth Glory, ultimately, it's their decision to let him go. So they could have persisted with him and said, no, you're going to stay regardless. But they made the decision to let him go. Yes, it was mutual, but, you know, They want to offload wages, obviously, as well, at the same time.
Yeah, I think the relationship between the club and the player seemed so fractured that it's just like you probably, and you'd know this as a former player, Trav, but you I'm assuming you just want those players like lingering around in the dressing room. So I think with Bruno there and the sort of culture that Zadkovic is trying to create there, he seems like quite a dominant personality. So I guess having him and Bruno clash heads probably wouldn't have been good for the group. But I was also going to say, whoever that script writer is at the APL, maybe the same person behind the camera for the Charlie Austin and Connor Chapman scene, I reckon he deserves a bit of a raise. I reckon TRNA, he's going to give him a raise because the whole A-League is scripted. It's a reality TV show. And bring on the Christmas derby, because these storylines that we've got now, they're just brilliant, aren't they?
They absolutely are. And there was a very good story within the Melbourne City game that occurred late Sunday. Melbourne City 2, Wellington Phoenix 2. Wellington 2 goals in the last 11 minutes to come back and draw. Tom, you were saying that you think City cracks might be starting to appear. It's the first points they've dropped all season. And, yeah, we had some people in the Kick 360 chat saying they're nailed on to win the grand final after round four, but maybe not so.
I haven't dropped this word yet within my few appearances on the show, but I think I'm going to drop it for the first time right now, and I'm going to say that City's three wins at the start of the season were absolutely fugazi, because they were outplayed against Melbourne Victory when Melbourne Victory had 10 men. They weren't great against Brisbane, granted that they had 10 men in that game, but they still weren't great. And they were good against Western United in the first game, but all of their opportunities came from Lacroix just having a brain fade and then pressing high up the pitch. They actually didn't really create that many opportunities in possession. And so when they came up against a side who can actually carve out good opportunities with the ball and are comfortable on the ball like Wellington, we saw on the weekend that City maybe aren't as good as people think they are, and that second coming of Messi, Suarez and Neymar front three maybe just isn't as good as people think they are as well. So I think people have got to sort of quell their expectations a bit with City. They aren't going to run rampant in this league. And I think you'll see as the season goes on, but I think Sydney, Adelaide even, for Lucas and Trav, we know that Adelaide don't get enough credit, do they? Wellington, Melbourne Victory, these types of teams, I think you'll see them start to challenge City. And I don't think City will have that sort of monopoly over the league that people seem to think they'll have.
Tom, look, the question that I have, right, is yes, okay, they haven't played well. But for me, that's actually the sign of a really good team, a team that can not play well but pick up 3 wins, 9 points, you know, get outplayed, play against 10 men, whatever it needs to be. I understand your point in that, you know, they're not playing magical football. But if they can get to a point where, you know, where Leckie, McLaren, Naboo, Tilio are firing, even Jamieson, even if that little midget stands up at the back, you know, then I believe they will go well. But in saying that, I understand your point that, you know, the level of the other teams is also rising, which is making it a lot closer competition, which is what everyone wants to see anyway.
Do you think, obviously, Jamo's been injured, didn't get off the bench on the weekend, but do you think that he's struggling with his short haircut, that he's so used to being able to look up at the screen and wave it out of his face that maybe it's just distracting him a little bit?
I think he's struggling with the receding hairline, like around here. He's still got the full head of hair there, but he's receding. But I think he's gone like, stuff, it's gone. And I think it's messed with his head, to be honest. He missed too many games last year through injury or his haircut. Maybe he's too embarrassed to go on the pitch because of his haircut. I don't know.
He's got a hairline fracture.
Good, Lucas.
Thought I'd tee that one up for you.
Whacking the only other one of the big name guests that we've ever had on the show. We're all mates. We're all mates.
Has Scott been on the show? Sorry.
Well, he was on the show in the former guys of the show, the Kid
last
Cast.
Last year, yeah.
Last year.
And he's the biggest name you've had on the show.
One of the big names. Second biggest now, Trav.
Yeah. Let me just say that Scott Jamieson hasn't scored for the Socceroos.
Trav, let's get back on track and let me ask you about Wellington. They still haven't won, but they've got 3 draws and they look quite impressive to me. I don't know how they look to you on Sunday. How'd they look?
No, look, I like Wellington. I like Ufi Tale. I think he's a really good coach. Even in the time that he's been there, he's building that squad. He's building that team to play a really good brand of football. And, yeah, I think they'll be a contender for finals and beyond. You know, Barbarousis has been one of my favourite players in the league. I just love those attacking type players. That, you know, Rojas was another one that I really like watching. I can't say Archie Thompson at all. But, you know, these attacking type players, they produce, and we saw Barbarousis again on the weekend scoring. Got was on the end of an elbow as well from Melbourne City, but I think he's an important piece of the Wellington puzzle this year.
I also think the second coming of Miloš Ninković, Petar Petrov's countryman Božidar Krajev, he actually looked quite good on the weekend as well. He came off the bench, but he looked like he had something a bit about him, I think. And Wellington, like, they were 2 goals down, and the players that came off the bench made a massive difference. As you mentioned there, Barbarousis comes off the bench, makes an immediate impact, scoring that equalising goal. Krajev came off the bench, played really well. But I think the big one was Ugarkovic didn't start the game, and he came off the bench and played a massive role in that second goal, starting that midfield chain with Clayton Lewis. So the fact that Wellington have the depth to be able to bring quality off the bench, I think is something which will also make them a good team this season. But I think the problem is some of those players in the starting 11 also need to pull their weight a bit. The likes of Sass, the Brazilian guy, and there's probably a couple others there that haven't been as good as they would have hoped so far. So, yeah, I like the look of Wellington. As I said in preseason, I think they're going to be a good side, and they are a good side. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go. But I agree with Trav there. I think they'll be hopefully challenging for finals.
Lucas, we'll move to another game and another two-goal lead that was overturned. Central Coast 4, Western United 2. 4 goals in the last, I think it was 25 minutes from Central Coast. And Garen Kwol looks quite good.
Yeah, well, he turned the game on its head coming on, and obviously at 2-0 down. Obviously, the red card helped as well to top Stanley, but every time he got the ball, he made something happen, and it's incredible. I'd really like to see him start a game at some point before he goes, because the ability to come on for that amount of time and just everything looks like it was coming through him, and just he's so creative, and he's got this ability to, when he gets inside the box, it almost looks like he's always about to lose the ball, but then manages to get it away and was pivotal in setting up a couple. Of course, Jason Cummings as well, putting his foot forward for the Socceroos, and then had one goal disallowed as well.
Two
goals disallowed, sorry.
Scored a hat-trick, but scored one. Just beyond that.
And the first one was a bizarre situation with the multi-ball one as well, which... To be honest, that one sort of has defied the rules to me, because it's not really their problem, and it wasn't.
That was shit, and it was a good goal too. It was a really good goal. Like, that's so against the spirit of the game.
Go on, Chuck.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you guys hammer referees on here. Do you?
Oh yes,
you could do what you'd like to do, Chuck.
The problem I have with the referees, right, in this game. How is the referee given that as a yellow card? That's what I don't understand. Like, I mean, I understand the initial one for Topper Stanley, but he's got him from behind, almost in his knee. Like, what are you looking at to give that a yellow card? It's just crazy. And then, you know, some of the other calls that we've seen already this season, they're just ludicrous. You know, I thought VAR was here to, you know, to help stop the shit decisions, but they seem to be endorsing him in some games.
And we haven't even got to MacArthur-Sydney yet, which we'll get to as well. That was the VAR disaster central. But I'm just glad, and as well for the things that went against the Mariners, that they still managed to get a result from this game and managed to sort of get themselves back on track. Because they have so much quality going forward. And with all the players they've lost, the fact that they've managed to keep together this sort of core of a team on the shoestring budget they work on is pretty impressive, really.
And I think apart from Victory being good and Adelaide being crap, there's nothing I enjoy seeing more in this league than Central Coast winning games, just because they're everyone's sort of second favourite team. And especially on the weekend, they were just so good to watch. Like, especially, I watched that game sort of after the Victory Brisbane game, when Victory were playing against the team with 10 men. And Victory showed that sometimes it's not that easy to play against 10 men if you don't actually play properly. So Central Coast pulled the other team. Who'd they play again? Someone tell me. Western United. That's it. Western United.
You just stuck on the fact that Melbourne Victory were crap against Brisbane.
Yeah. But Western United, of course. Western United were just so good that game that I just completely forgot them. But yeah, they pulled their defence apart so easily, and they were just pulling them out of position. Western United were sitting really deep, but they couldn't do anything. They could barely touch the ball. Central Coast were doing such an awesome job. And Garen Kwol, Lucas mentioned him there, but he was just insane off the bench. He obviously was the one that got absolutely scythed down by Topple Stanley for that red card challenge. But I think the impact that he had in pretty much all of the goals, with his incisiveness, his vision, his passing quality, which I think is quite underrated actually, just shows that he has so many strings to his bow. And that sort of move that he did to completely send Ben Garuccio for a hot dog was just insane. And that's against Garuccio, who was one of the best defenders in the league last season and is still probably one of the best fullbacks in the league. So, yeah, I've run out of things to say about Garen Kuol. I think he's so good, and I honestly can't wait to see him in Qatar.
Just before we move on to some more Socceroos chat, Lucas, I'll just ask you very quickly about Western United. Would you like to express your disappointment with Western United not going too well in the opening four games?
I'm not going to say I told you so yet, but when we did our season preview, what did I say? They're not making finals, and look at them, champions, bottom of the ladder. So, you know, football genius, and that's why I am top of the tips. Jared Lynch can say that he's top. He didn't put his tips in time in round one. Violation, I'm top.
Hey, Lucas, where was Adelaide United on the table after eight or nine rounds when they won the championship?
Bottom, but, you know, I'm going in early. I'm sticking to it.
You're going to double up on that?
Some infighting with the South Australians, but we'll go very broad patriotic now and hit the stinger for one of our favourite segments, our weekly segment, Socceroos Bolters and Falters. Everyone's favourite song there, which perfectly fits everyone's favourite segment. Lucas, why don't we go to you first? Who have you got down as your bolter for the Socceroos this week?
Well, you could technically say Kuol because he's almost on the edge, but we're not going to say him because I feel like that's cheating. He should be there anyway. I'm going to go Mark Birigidi, finally back in the team for Dundee United, who they played. Who'd they play again, Harper?
They played Motherwell.
Yeah, she's fine. Thanks, Matt. He's...
Your dad told me that one, surely.
The worst part is I messaged Harper earlier saying, make sure you know who Dundee United played. But he has been out of the team. And if you look at the goalkeeping stocks for the Socceroos, there's actually not too many Ryan's obviously not playing. There's not too many that are sort of in contention and doing well. So he could, I think he might end up being our fourth choice goalkeepers between him and Vukovic. And from there, it's just a matter of if he gets on the plane or not. For the goal that he conceded, it was sort of actually a really good save, which then bounced out and Dundee and Motherwell scored from it. So, he's my bolter for the week. Pardon?
So it wasn't a really good save.
He was unlucky that his brilliant save then turned into a rebound.
Right. Okay.
We're meant to be on the same size here, mate.
You didn't tell me that in the message. You didn't say that in the message. But
I thought I did you a favour smashing Jammo for you.
Yeah.
Lucas, you messaged me asking who Mark Birigidi played about 10 minutes into the show, and I knew there was something a bit suspicious at play there because I'm never meant to be the expert. I don't know anything. I do about 10 minutes of research for every podcast just to let you guys do the talking. Tom, who have you got down as your bolter?
Well, my bolter this week is Alessandro Cicciatti. Even though he didn't play this week, I feel like I haven't really mentioned him a lot, and we haven't really mentioned him a lot on the pod. But he's someone that that I think deserves a bit of chat, just because he's had a pretty decent start to his season with Parma in Serie B. And he's only 19 years old. There's a chance he might choose to play for Italy, like our good friend Christian Volpato. But I think with Australia's defensive stocks at the moment, in terms of especially Harry Suter and Kai Rolls still being under an injury cloud, I think Cicciatti is a really decent option to bring in, just because there's not that many defenders, particularly at the centre of defence, that are in really good form at the moment. So I think having him there and locking him into the Socceroos would be great, because he seems like he could be a good player for the future. I will also say about Lucas's bolter, thank God Birigidi is back in the team for Dundee United, because that other geezer that they had playing in goal, Carl Johan Eriksson or whatever, I swear to God, he literally played like a cardboard cutout with no hands. He was so bad. He was literally like the second coming of Ivan Keliver. He was absolutely dreadful.
Travis, we did warn you about doing this segment, but have you got any things that you've taken note of?
We didn't, like, when it comes to guys, but no, I've got my bolter. My bolter is it's Nesta Irinkunda. He came on and did a step over and almost scored, and for me, that's enough. Get him in the Socceroos.
Well, I mean, that's all that it's taken for people to get Arzani into the frame, so.
Hey, at least Irinkunda started more games than Kuol. There you go.
I've actually made that point previously. See, Irukunda, get him there. Both of them. Have them both start.
Exactly. And then the boys will kick cross on the weekend. Like, what do you want? Like, Arnie, come on.
Trav, have you got a falter? Someone who maybe took a bit of a backward step in terms of getting into the Socceroos squad? It's fine if you don't, but do you?
He's not actually in the Socceroos squad, so I don't know if he's probably just taken a further step back from the Socceroos squad. Scott Jamieson.
He was certainly in contention.
What can I say? The haircut says it all. Get him out. Don't even make Melbourne City these days. That's all I got for you, boys.
have you got anyone that you'd like to add into the mix of falters, including Scott Jamieson? Lucas?
Who was that too? Sorry. Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you say my name. I was thinking he's just said it. I would like to say Tom Rogic. He's just not playing. He can't go to Qatar if he's just not been playing. I think that's so harsh on him. Especially after the events, it's not like a situation where, say, someone like Matt Ryan, who has played and is just not getting picked. Rogic didn't have a club for about 6 months, so he was training by himself for a long amount of time. So I don't know. I think, well, it looks like the squad will probably be announced in the next week or so. I think Rogic will probably at least be in a preliminary squad. To be honest, he probably will make it even with a lack of game time, but to me, he's on the edge.
Tom, who's on the edge for you?
Oh, I think I'll link this into what Lucas was saying there, because the person who's on the edge for me is Jake Brimmer, and I don't think he's done his chances any real justice with his form at the start of this season. He hasn't really been that good, but neither have Victory, to be fair. But with Rogic, if someone like Brimmer was in really good form, I feel like they'd probably be more inclined to leave Rogic out. But given that, like, I'm trying to think of who else would probably be up there for that number 10 spot, and there's really no other players which, like, take your fancy unless you're going to go pick Volpato. So with Brimmer being out of form, I think it actually might necessitate them picking Rogic, especially because we don't know if Rusic is going to be fit for the World Cup, which is actually a bit of an indictment on our stocks because, like Lucas said, he hasn't been playing and he's not playing for a great team. He's at West Brom. Like, and they're struggling in the championship, albeit, I mean, it's a team who probably stylistically doesn't fit the way that Rogic likes to play, but still you'd expect him to be getting more minutes. And so I don't think that's great. For the Socceroos at all. So hopefully Brimmer can get better in the next few weeks and start staking his claim for that spot again, or in the next week, start staking his claim for that spot, because he would have been in the preliminary, like, 55-man squad, but I think he'll just miss out on the 26.
Well, Rogic didn't even make the West Brom squad on the weekend, I think, which definitely doesn't increase his chances of getting a spot on the plane. But we'll continue on the Socceroos theme and chat about the statement they made just in the past week, the collective statement from 16 of the players speaking out about Qatar's human rights issues. Lucas, what have you got to say on this?
Yeah, I'll keep it relatively short because I'm looking at the time and going, we're halfway through and still got four of the games to get through, plus all the reason that Trav's actually here. I think it was a very powerful move to make, and I like the way they've done it as well. I think a big part of what they said was, we don't know everything. Because I think if they came across and just said, oh, this is what Qatar needs to do to fix the issues they've got there, then it might have come across the wrong way. But I think those lines in there, and obviously I can't imagine the players would have too much involvement in what they're actually speaking about, but it's impossible not to agree with the statement. And I think the Qatar, I can't remember if it was the Qatar FA or the Qatar government, have said something along the lines of, well, there's problems going on in Australia too. Of course they are. If Qatar want to come across and fix our problems, go ahead. I'm sure they build things quicker than us, but maybe we do it in a more legal way. So I think it was a statement that needs to be made, and I think we'll probably be trendsetters in this regard. But yeah, I'm pretty proud that we were so early to go on it, and I think it reflects pretty well on Australian people as a whole rather than just football.
Just one more on this for you, Tom. The cynics, the sceptical people about this whole thing are asking what it's going to achieve. It's empty words, blah, 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 blah. What is it going to achieve? What do you have to say to those people?
Well, I think the thing that people have been saying is that it's virtue signaling. And I just think it's not very fair to say that, because statements like this from sports people, and to be honest, like, you can say what you want about the Socceroos in terms of their ability or whatever, but I don't think you can actually say that they're virtue signaling when there's members of the Socceroos like Jackson Irvine who clearly give a shit about the stuff that he's saying, and he's not just saying it as empty words, because you can tell that he believes in this stuff. He lives his daily life on these moral principles, plays for a club that literally, like, that parades these sort of principles. So I just don't really understand that sort of sentiment and the power that sports people can have to sort of make this sort of change, I think is really important. But I agree 100% that they were really smart in the way that they framed the rhetoric, because, look, to be honest, I actually agree that if you go to, like, some other country, it's sort of like a matter of principle that you should abide by their customs. But I think the thing is that FIFA in the first place shouldn't have awarded the World Cup to a country like Qatar with these customs. So I think that's the big problem in this whole debate, is that FIFA are the ones that should be copying everything, because ultimately, I don't want to get all year 12 global politics here, but the state is what gets to decide what they do in their own borders. Qatar are doing what they want. Unfortunately, there's not enough enforcement mechanisms in the rules-based international order to actually hold them to account for some of these atrocities that they've done. And there's not really much that other people can do about it. So it's good that the Socceroos have brought this stuff to light, because I think it has more. It allows us to kickstart a better conversation for the future about FIFA and the bidding process and things that must be in place before we award countries like Qatar the World Cup.
Let's move back to on pitch matters. An issue that matters a whole lot less than the human rights abuses in Qatar. It was MacArthur 2, Sydney 3, and Trav, the VAR, no doubt you have some words to say on that.
The VAR is useless. It is. I don't get it. How do you have the player gets run into the back of him and he's given the penalty away? I don't know. It's disappointing that we can't get it right with VAR, and it impacts games. But not only does it impact games, but it impacts livelihoods. It impacts people's way of living, because these referees, they make decisions, VAR make decisions, and it influences games. And from what we see, there's no accountability. There's none. What I would love to see with referees that are mic'd, that they should be mic'd up, and it's broadcast the conversations that they're having with VAR, because that way there's some I guess, reasoning on why they're coming up with what they're coming with. But, you know, that being said, it is what it is. You know, Sydney still have to go out there and do a job to win a game. They still have to go out there and score goals. And as you said before, Tom, just playing against 10 men doesn't make it an automatic result. So players have to go out there and do the right thing. And to MacArthur's credit, you know, they kept going till the end, and, you know, they got one late in the game and, you know, tried to keep going, tried to keep forcing the issue.
And Football Australia has just confirmed, I think it was today actually, that they'll be hosting regular briefings with the media to chat about all these issues, and they'll get the big dogs and the referee scene to talk the media through it all. But Lucas, MacArthur, they on their socials, on TikTok and on Twitter, maybe on other places as well, they really lambasted the refereeing. Of course, there was that penalty and the Aspro red card, and the chairman wasn't happy, the social admin wasn't happy. It was just not happy people at MacArthur.
Yeah, I think for anyone that hasn't seen it, so it's just a TikTok that they put out, basically just blaming it on the ref, which normally I'm torn on, because I think there was a bit of, in our little group chat, there was a bit of confusion and disagreement about this, because normally I'd say it's unprofessional, which it is for a professional outfit to criticise the referees. But it's also unprofessional for the FA to two times in a week have just the worst possible decisions made. I don't understand how you can look at that first penalty, give the call, and then not overturn it. It's just insane. So I can understand the frustration in saying that professional organisations shouldn't be coming out on their own social media. Feel free, the chairman can do it on his, but they shouldn't be doing that. It's quite unprofessional to do it in that sort of climate. But I can understand their frustration, because once again, well, Sydney have profited off it twice in the space of a week or so, which I'm sure our conspiracy segment would love. But Sydney have really profited big time off of a couple of massive errors.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that, and it's unfortunate that we're having these conversations about the VAR every week. But when there's such shocking decisions, I think sometimes they have to be had. I think where it gets a bit interesting is that I think people find it easier to criticize the VAR just because, like, that a lot of these times, like, you just don't see the VAR. You see the ref out on the pitch and he's like an actual human being, and I feel like people have a bit more sympathy for that. Whereas Harper, if you could please play the football conspiracies stinger for me right now. My football conspiracy for this week, even though it's not an official segment, I'm breaking up the show for this week. Hope this doesn't cause too much trouble. But my conspiracy is that nobody has actually ever seen Chris Griffiths Jones in real life, and that he is just a robot that lives in the VAR booth in Sydney and doesn't actually exist as a human being.
Well,
leave you with that one, Tom.
Yeah. I'm not going to agree with that or disagree with that. I'll just leave that out there for people to think of that, whatever they will. But let's move on to Adelaide 2, Perth Glory 1, who two of the people on this panel are no doubt hungry to speak about. Craig Goodwin, Lucas, you were very impressed by him.
Yeah, I just think it's impossible for him not to go to Qatar now. I think he's cemented his place. I think he should start. That's another story. Against France, because none of our other wingers are playing to his standard. He's just Adelaide's best player by mile. He's the best player in the competition. And he just picks up the team on his back and carries them to points. Adelaide dominated. Perth looked awful in that first half an hour. Up until the second goal, it was just embarrassing defending, really. Of course, in the end, Adelaide definitely should have won by more. I think George Blackwood will be disappointed that he didn't get a couple off the bench. But Halloran said after the game as well that it was almost a bit luck. They were a bit nervy having not won yet this season. They just needed to get that one out of the way. So now I think with the way they played as well, to get that sort of monkey off the back, they can sort of start pushing on. And with Western United to come this weekend, that's a pretty good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, Adelaide.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, yeah, I actually thought that Perth started okay, albeit it was brief. Yeah, it was 5 or so minutes, but, you know, particularly down the right-hand side, Adelaide's left, yeah, they were getting a bit of joy with Duncan, McInniff, I think Williams at one point, you know, some good combinations getting behind. But from that point, you know, Adelaide started to take control. Two set pieces for Perth Glory is what let them down, a throw-in and a free kick. They've switched off on both occasions, and, you know, credit to Adelaide, they've been able to punish them for it. So the first one, not being able to clear the lines from Halloran, he's won a second ball and just dinked it in behind. Defenders have switched off for Goodwin for a good finish. And then the second one for the free kick, yeah, defenders have switched off again, thinking that ball's going to go out, but Wallen keeps it in, and Ibasuki's got the easiest tap-in of his career. So, you know, from there, it looked like it was one-way traffic. You know, they got the goal and brought them back in the game. But second half, I thought Perth were a lot better. Ryan Williams, I thought, was really good second half. He, you know, caused a bit of problem for Kiddo, which, you know, by him being a lot more attacking in that second half, forced Kiddo to sit back, which was the opposite in the first 45. Kiddo was getting forward a lot, creating good combinations with Goodwin, and, you know, that's when they were able to assert a lot of dominance. But, you know, from the persistence of Williams, you know, he really limited Kiddo in that second half. Should they have scored more goals? Most definitely. That's probably one thing they are lacking, is, you know, that 15-goal-a-year goal scorer. If they've got that, then, you know, I think their season becomes a very different proposition.
Trav, we'll stick with you. We'll move on from the game. We'll talk to you about what you're here to talk about. The South Australian Indigenous Football Organisation you started. Can we call it SAFE? Is that what we roll with? Call it SAFE?
No, I call it SAIF.
SAIF? Okay, we'll call S-A-I-F. It S-A-I-F.
Yes.
S-A-I-F. Yeah. I was reading that lots of the work you do in this field is kind of born out of a regret that you felt. So speak to us about just what you do in the field and what the organisation's all about, if you will.
Yeah, so I did. I started doing some coaching with the Indigenous women's team, the Koalas, 2 years ago up in Queensland. So Queensland Indigenous Football got these teams together, the men's and the women's team, played a couple of exhibition games in Queensland. My second year around was in March of this year. And off the back of that, we had some discussions and we formed the Australian Indigenous Football Council. And it's got members from each state. And then off the back of that, we wanted to form a state organisation for each one so that we could, you know, be a feeder into Australian Indigenous football. So, you know, we've got a tournament coming up in Brisbane, 3rd of November. So it's the first time that we'll be taking under South Australian Indigenous football a men's and youth team to the tournament. So it's a pretty good opportunity that, you know, we're excited to be able to give Indigenous youth kids in South Australia these opportunities. We were lucky enough on the weekend to be able to go to the Adelaide United Perth game and, you know, be pitch side for the warm up. You know, form a guard of honour for the players to come out, be there for the live greeting the country, which was all in aid of Indigenous Football Week, which is promoted through John Moriarty Football Foundation, the JMF. So, yeah, look, ideally this organisation is around to create opportunities for young Indigenous kids to play the game, to further their education, to help them with their well-being and mental health, because these are all things that, you know, we feel that football can contribute to the development of these kids. And ultimately, help them be role models in the community. Perfect world is that we have a Socceroo or Matilda come out of this.
How hard is it to get something like this off the ground, both from a financial standpoint and, as you mentioned, the first time a South Australian team has gone over, both financially and trying to just round up everyone in general?
Yeah, look, it's really tough. You know, we've done all this inside of 3 months. You know, we were lucky that we had, you know, like the constitution was already preformed, so we could just mold that. But you have to come up with a constitution. You have to have a board. You have to register the organisation. You have to get an ABN. You have to get a tax file number. You have to get a bank account. And all of that is just roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. So that's before you even get started. Then it's trying to find the players. Now, in South Australia, there's about 320 registered Indigenous players, but, you know, trying to get in contact with them. So having to liaise with Football South Australia to get their endorsement first to be able to even reach out to players, then getting players to respond. So, look, it's monumentous, and that's before you even try to get the team over there. Then, you know, we've got a three-month window to try go out and raise, you know, 30-odd grand from sponsors to try and help us get over there because, as we know, football's an expensive sport. And, you know, to ask, you know, and it's not just kids, but it's adults as well, to come up with, you know, 1,500 bucks to go for a four-day tournament, it's really tough. So, you know, I'm fortunate that I haven't done it by myself, because if it was just me, I wouldn't have done it. So, yeah, there are a lot of sponsors and people to thank. And, yeah, look, to be honest, it helps. You know, even with you, Lucas, with your support, you know, in the media that you do, that raises awareness and makes our life somewhat easier.
Is there...
My pleasure, mate. Tom, did you have another question as well?
No, but I would just like to say that this is, yeah, it's a great initiative, Travis. So I think absolutely, yeah, really appreciate all the work that you're doing. And I think it's really important to try and harness the rich Indigenous community that we've got in Australia. A lot of people won't know about me that I'm Aboriginal. My dad's a Jar Jar Rung. His mob's Jar Jar Rung out in country Victoria near Bendigo, Castlemaine sort of area. And so I'm obviously really passionate about all this sort of stuff. And part of my role with what I do with my actual job is working with young Indigenous people. So seeing the passion that these kids have for sport. Shout out to Waylon, Malachi, Bruce, Marley, Leo, Antonio, and Adam, if you're listening. but the passion that these kids have for sport is absolutely incredible. And I think in the past, football as a whole has missed that opportunity, because I think other sports have encouraged these people. You see, even with basketball and obviously AFL, there's a lot of Indigenous people playing in those codes, whereas in football, we don't have it. And it's disappointing, really, because football at its core is such a simple sport to get people involved in. All you need is a football, and it doesn't even have to be a proper football. You can, like in communities all around the world, they use whatever they have to play football in the streets and do that. So I think it's a really awesome thing that you're doing to try and get young people, especially young Indigenous people, more involved with the sport itself. And I really hope that this can kickstart more of a conversation about that into the future, because I think it's a really unexplored avenue, even for just finding talent for our national teams, because we know us Aboriginal people, we are bloody good at sport. and we've seen that in a lot of other sports. And who knows, maybe one day I'll be the second Indigenous person to score for the Socceroos. I'm assuming no one else has scored since Trav.
It's been a while between drinks, mate, that's for sure.
That's why they call me the Div 4 Duke.
Trav, what are the spots that you would like people to check you out through, the avenues?
So, look, we've got Facebook and Instagram, but our main focus is on Instagram. So it's SA_Indigenous football, something like that. Just, I'm sure you'll find it. I don't manage that account. So
SA_Indigenous_football.
Football. I was pretty close. No, look, we're just trying to raise awareness. You know, obviously, we're going on a tournament this week. But, you know, the long-term goal is to get long-term funding to have significant ongoing programs in both metro and regional communities. It's not about having a one-day clinic or a one-week clinic here, there and everywhere and then saying, see you later, we'll see you next year. It's about going out on a weekly basis, you know, to a region, you know, to, you know, provide opportunities, you know, to get the kids engaged. And look, one of the big things, you know, you touched on it, Tom, about AFL and basketball, it's all free to wear. So they can watch it every day. There's always something on, the media always promoting it, and our game doesn't get enough of it. We're on pay TV, you get two games a week, and it's just not enough. So if we want to convert kids, not just Indigenous kids, if we want to convert any kids to play a game, it's got to be free to wear, because we need to show these kids what potential they can reach. Yes, we've got the World Cup, but we can't show them that every week. So, yeah, there's a lot of work to do, I think.
And we'll move back to the games, and a game that most of us just didn't watch because I don't think it was on free-to-air, but most of us didn't watch it anyway, and I asked Tom about it. Western Sydney 2, Newcastle 0.
Yeah, we saw exactly what we've come to expect from Western Sydney this season. Really tough, resolute in defence, disciplined unit. Except they actually looked quite a lot better in attack this game as well, because we saw Brandon Borello, someone who is probably on the periphery of the Socceroos squad. I was surprised, actually, neither of us sort of mentioned him as our bolter. We saw his agent, John Grimaud, banging that drum on Twitter during the week. So, on the weekend, but no surprises there, really. But to be fair, he had an excellent game. So it'd be interesting. Maybe he could make a late run towards the Socceroos squad. Might take Grimaud's other client spot, Matthew Leckie, but we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, it was a really thorough, good performance from Western Sydney. And Newcastle just keep sort of proving that even though they're a really good team in terms of the pressure they put on the ball, they can play with the ball as well, they're just not good enough defensively. And I've said it time and time again, it's going to be a massive gap to bridge between them being sort of bottom three teams in the league and being a team that competes for finals if they just leak goals every single week. And at the moment, they're doing that. And I think it's too much of a gap for them to reconcile this season. So, yeah, a bit unfortunate for Newcastle. But Western Sydney look the goods this season. So hopefully they can continue because the league needs Western Sydney to be good. I thought they got around 9,000 for the crowd. So hopefully that keeps improving as well, because if they keep winning games, I think hopefully we'll get crowds in excess of around 12,000, 13,000, hopefully.
And Brisbane, back in the very inaccessible Redcliffe, back at Dolphin Stadium, they drew nil-all with Victory after going down to 10 men. But Victory, Tom, I'll ask you again, Victory just couldn't break them down in that final, what was it, 35 minutes?
Yeah, Victory were horrendous. They were really bad. It was so frustrating to watch. Like, so many opportunities, you're just thinking, like, be more patient with the ball. Stop just shooting from outside the box as soon as you get half a second of time on the ball, and stop playing the ball out wide and aimlessly crossing the ball to D'Agostino when they've got really big centre backs sitting in the middle of the box that are just going to head the ball away. And then even then, when the ball was getting headed away, our midfielders weren't working hard enough to win the second ball. So it was so frustrating. I don't think it was as bad as the Western Sydney game, but just based off the mere fact that we actually created some opportunities. But for the whole of the game, like, you'd probably say that Brisbane were good value for a point, the way that they managed to sit deep and hold on to the game there. And I think Victory are just having so many issues at the moment with playing against the teams that like to sit deep and absorb pressure. It was something that we saw a bit of last season, especially in that Errorstrone semi-final defeat at the hands of Western United. And I think it's somewhat of a blueprint to stifle Melbourne victory at the moment. And this is why I think Fornaroli could be a bit of a game changer, because he can actually create things against a low block side that probably D'Agostino can't, when D'Agostino is more of like a menacing threat in transition with his runs off the shoulder. And the only thing that he really provides if you're playing against a team that sits deep is his heading ability. And even then, I think it's sort of a bit of a trap as well, because then you sort of just get in the trap of being like, oh yeah, D'Agostino's a great header. We're struggling to create opportunities through the middle here. Let's just get the ball out wide and cross it to D'Agostino and see if he wins a header over four people. And it just doesn't really work like that. We whipped in, I think, 31 crosses on the weekend, and none of them were really close to scoring apart from a couple of set pieces. So, yeah, it was a really poor display from Melbourne Victory, but I have absolutely no doubts that it will improve. Let's get that on the record right now. Not off the record, as Neil Simons would say, but definitely get that on the record. I think we'll improve, and I think Bruno Fornaroli will be a big signing, and that I've seen enough from Melbourne Victory's sort of 15-minute displays in the middle of games this season to think that we've got enough quality to challenge still.
Now, I know Lucas and Trav are just about bursting to add on to the Victory Brisbane nil-all analysis, but I'm bursting to move on to our final segment, which we've been dangling for quite a few weeks now. We've got a name and a stinger for it, which I've come up with on the fly during this recording, and I'll play the stinger for it in a bit, but I'll just introduce it first. So people who listened to the KickCast last season might know that we all like to sing songs about Socceroos, chants, songs, all that kind of thing. So Tom, Lucas and I have each come up, and we'll be doing this each week in the lead up to the World Cup, with a song slash chant that hopefully will be heard in Qatar. And Trav, if you'd like to, we'd love you to vote on whose song is the best, and then we'll get the best song from each week and the listeners to vote for their favourite, and we're going to try to get the listener's favourite to the hottest 100 in Triple J in January.
I don't
maybe unattainable, but we're going for it.
Mine's a chant, not a song, so I think mine's already out of contention.
we'll turn Same. It into a song. We'll get the producers on it. And the segment, the name that I've come up with on the fly is called Qatar Hero.
That's your best one. If the name was just the segment, this would be the greatest segment that's ever been seen. But you're about to see our songwriting ability, so you might be about to disagree.
Trav, listeners, prepare to be underwhelmed. Lucas, would you like to go first?
I have. So on the previous edition, we had Simon Hill on the show. For anyone that was not listening to that great edition, Simon Hill judged our songs just before the Japan game, and I came up with an absolute masterpiece. Which won the competition.
It was an absolute masterpiece.
I've since realised that I'm a one-hit wonder. So lower your expectations, please. Trav, I believe when you were at United, was your song something about having a magic hat?
It was.
Okay. So I've readapted that tune to
a song. So you've already got a vote there, so that's good.
Yeah. So I've readapted that tune to a song about Harry Souttar. So it goes like this. So it goes, Souttar's fucking massive. He wears an Aussie cap. He could have played for Scotland, but he said no, fuck that. Put away the haggis and grabbed a big meat pie. Now we're going to Doha with his big head in the sky. And that's why I said I'm a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, can't see that hitting Triple J. If I'm being honest.
We'll add a couple of verses to that chorus, and you never know. We could sprinkle our magic dust over it. You never know what it could
this
be.
This is unfair, Tom. Harper, because you can do music. You got a guitar in the back of your set. Me and Tom are musicians.
Mate,
what are
you had a guitar
on
with Simon Hill. You did very well just by bringing out the guitar. Thank you very much.
That's it.
Tom, hit us. What have you got?
Well, but before I come up with the song, I've just got to get something prepared here. There goes the AirPod, but we are now ready. Aiden Hrustic kit at the ready. It's not a song about Aiden Hrustic, though, because I couldn't get any words to rhyme with. I couldn't get any words to rhyme with Hrustic. So, but what I've got is another version of Allah, 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 because who doesn't love it? And everyone knows how the tune goes. So here we go. Every year we follow the boys in golden green. We even conquered Asia in the year 2015. Though times they have been hard, we'll follow near and far. For Johnny and Les Murray, we'll win it in Qatar. Ale, ale, ale.
Can we just before we get Trav's opinion, can we just edit in after Harper the song that I did right about now?
Like, seeing we've got Simon on, I've decided I'll pull out the guitar. And we're going all out. And I'll have you know, I think I've played guitar in front of about 3 people in my whole life. But we're going all out. So this is a bit of Johnny Warren tied into this. I listened back to Johnny. He said, I told you so. With Rogic and Matt Leckie, the World Cup we will go. You know they tried to stop us, but we're never gonna lose. We're Sheila Wogs and Pufters. Call us the Socceroos. Ale, ale, ale.
Yeah,
that's
very good.
Brilliant stuff.
Plagiarism. Because everyone that heard the last one, that was basically my song. But go, Trav, give us your take.
Was it just you two?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I've got one to add as well. Oh, yeah, maybe we should wait till I do it for all the takes. But look, I expected Lucas to be bringing out the guitar as he did last time. And I tried to match him, and I've got the keyboard out. But I look like I've gone over the top because I've got the keyboard out, and no one else has got musical instruments. But yeah, let's give this a go. Could be the difficult third single of the season. But look, let's try it. Back in 2018 in Russia, we were all singing Van Marwijk. He was shite, but now in the desert of Doha, a new green and gold takeover. With Cumdog, Redmayne and Hrustic all gracing the Qatar pitch. France, Denmark and Tunisia, Big Dog Arnie's coming for ya. All for the Socceroos. All for the Socceroos. If we win or lose, always green and gold for the Socceroos. There we go.
That was good.
Thank you. The T-Rex arms didn't go too well.
That was horrific.
But
that was horrific.
I concur.
Do you do this every week? That?
No.
Do that every week?
No, but now we're going to have to.
Oh, my God.
Go on, pick a winner out of that shit.
Yeah. Well, look, it's pretty easy. Harper, you're the winner, mate, because you got the keyboard out and you went for more than about 15 seconds. So, you know, at least you got a tune in the background there that you can get it on Triple J. So, congratulations, Harper.
It's like this picking round. A favourite South Australian. It's
oh, shit, sorry. No, Harper, you're out. Lucas, well done.
Yes. Oh, fucking Bradbury.
All right. Well, now that we'll give Lucas the win there, shall we? I don't know.
Oh. Nah, no, I don't want it.
I don't want it. I need the Bradbury, by the way.
I think all of us were preparing those songs about 10 minutes before the podcast kicked off. But look, we've got a bit over time. So, Trav, thanks very much for being so generous this evening. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you again soon. Really appreciate it, mate.
Pleasure. No worries. The invoice is in the mail.
And Lucas, cheers, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, mates. And yeah, my invoice is in the mail for the rest of these ones as well.
Jeez. Bold. Tom, I hope you won't be.
I don't think I deserve anything after that song.
If Tom asks for something, the Gold Generation budget is just going to be in a state of disrepair. So, Tom, thanks for coming on, but I hope you're not going to be asking for anything.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely will not. Otherwise, Harper might have to enlist the Golden Generation board to go and sort that out. But always a pleasure, Harper. Thanks again.
And thanks for listening. As ever, guys, we'll see you same time next week.